You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by business and political expert Jay Amernick, political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, and me, journalist in all media, Heather Vail, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com. And welcome to The Political Fix for July 16th, a beautiful summer afternoon, summer morning, if you're here on the Pacific Coast. Going into afternoon, if you're in the Eastern region, I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Jay's a strategic planner, helping his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. And he's also the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their business in the U.S. He also has a development lab which creates smartphone apps and other inventions. Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur and internet marketer with a degree in philosophy, and that degree led to his political development, which he calls The Solution, as well as Pentonomics, which is the philosophy behind The Solution. I'm Heather Vail, journalist in all media, known as the Unwrapper, because I like to unwrap the truth through the process of interviews and research. Hey, guys, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing great.
Awesome. And it's nice that we're all on the Hangout today. So yes. We're all on the radio show and the Hangout. So anyone watching, if you want to go to politicalfixradio.com, you can see us live behind the scenes on the video, and you can hear us bantering as commercials play on the real show. But if you want to just listen to the real show with the fully produced After Effects, you can either listen there, wherever you are right now, actually, or you can also listen at politicalfixradio.com. Just go over to the right and hit the play button. So let's get started with, for people who don't know, for people who are just tuning in, for people who may not be familiar with The Solution, as Rick calls it. Rick, why don't you tell us what the philosophy is behind The Solution?
Sure. It's really simple. Everyone knows about capitalism. Everyone knows about democracy. Everyone knows about diplomacy and national defense. And these three things, capitalism, democracy, and diplomacy, defense, these are the three pillars of modern society. But what we've discovered is that there's two more pillars that no one knows about. And one is what you get if you properly structure government spending. If you make ideas compete so that the best ideas win. It's not happening right now. It's you know, people are trying. But to really make it fierce competition, you need a cap. And to really make sure the good guys win, the good ideas win, you need to prioritize, actually publish a prioritized budget, where all the spending is ranked from top to bottom. So our proposal is cap and prioritize to get government spending efficient, effective, and aggressive, but also within limits. And then once that's done, once other nations copy that idea, then we can start to see a world largely at peace, largely compatible philosophically, ready to do cap and trade on a global level, which will help with sustainability long term. So the five pillars of future society end up being capitalism, democracy, then diplomacy / defense, and then this cap and prioritized spending, we call it prioritism, and then this capped and traded economizing of our resources, which we call maturityism. So those are the five pillars of a future society, and our mission here is to help people understand that and see how this solves problems we have today.
Okay, so it all sounds great, except the part where you say that other nations will copy it. I'm just not sure that's going to happen, just because you say so.
It happens only if it works. Okay, you know, the capitalism happened, and it worked, and so people copied it. In fact, you couldn't produce a good military if you didn't copy the economics of capitalism. And then democracy worked. And democracy keeps the military's defensive and help make capitalism safe for investment, and so those economies grew faster. And then you couldn't compete if you didn't have democracy, or some form of democracy like a constitutional republic. And so ideas that work will spread. And so if cap and prioritize really is the best way to do government spending, then it will spread. That simple.
Okay. Jay, what are your thoughts?
There you go.
No, I agree. I think that, you know, the countries that are not so ensconced in their own radical ideologies will adopt this if it works, because the idea is that it actually makes everybody happy. So, you know, the thing that the people on the right would be skeptical about and the things that the people on the left would be skeptical about will all be satisfied. And then they'll say, well, in that case, sure, you know, most people are going to get tired of fighting about it, you know, internally. So if something makes sense, they're going to do it.
Hmm.
No, okay. Dictatorships, no, we're always going to have those. But they will become more and more isolated and more marginalized as time goes on.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. It just seems like just because something's a good idea, you know, we've seen time and time again when people do not adopt good ideas and they don't do something just because other people are making it work. Like, they stubbornly continue fighting.
Right.
They stubbornly continue with archaic ways of ruling their countries.
That was my point, Heather. Go ahead, Rick. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Either way. Okay, thank you. You're right, Heather. People don't copy or even do good ideas simply because they're good ideas. It has to be a good idea that actually works. So someone has to do it by accident, they stumble into it, or there's a movement, there's some kind of exceptional situation where it just kind of happens. So that's how history happens. It's like it happens one place for some weird reason, but then it works. Then it gets copied on purpose.
Okay, so realistically, what's the time frame that you see before even Americans can make this work, before even people can even think about copying it?
Let's see. I think there's a race. I think one of the two most likely scenarios here is that a foreign nation that's in trouble financially, like Greece was recently and probably still is, in their desperation, once this idea spreads around the world, it's of austerity being the price of a bailout, cap and prioritize will be the price of a bailout, which is basically austerity plus more prioritizing, so that the people who need help most get the help they need, and then social justice is pursued within those limits. And so that's an easier pill to swallow than austerity alone. So one possibility is that a foreign nation will do this first because of desperation, and we basically required them to do it if they're going to get our money in a bailout. The other possibility is that some modern democracy, probably here in the U.S., because we're a little bit different than most other major democracies, we still have a really strong conservative freedom kind of focus in this country, and a lot of other foreign nations don't have that. So another possibility is that here in America, the moderates unite behind this, or the Republicans learn that this is the politically viable way to spending cap, or the Democrats, especially red states that are competing, learn that there's a way to protect their pursuit of social justice within the limits that they have to work within because of the place that they're running. So something like that happens in the U.S., and that can happen anywhere between 3 and 20 years, is my guess. I say 3 years just because, you know, anything in politics takes that long to kind of, you know, become part of the national debate. And 20 years because, you know, that's a couple election cycles, and I'm going to be working my butt off to make this go viral and get in the national debate. And I think that's realistic, because some type of spending cap, typically a balanced budget amendment, becomes almost politically viable every 20 years. We came within one vote of a balanced budget amendment, I think, twice in our history in the last 40 years. And so the prospect of that happening again and getting close to getting some kind of cap on government is likely. It's happened many times before. And with the idea of prioritizing now as something we can marry to that to help people who would normally not support a spending cap, not only because the people who most will get prioritized, that's what my point is. So it actually is more likely than people realize.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, let's have the job story, and then we can talk about...
I'm going to give one other possibility. One other possibility. And that is that maybe no one gets this, but the political right, because of some hardship, finally has enough votes to get some kind of cap on government. Well, as soon as you're capped, all you can do is prioritize. So it may actually happen that way, kind of through the back door, where we don't realize it's a two-part solution, but we do part one first, and then we start fighting about priorities, and then we actually prioritize. And that's where we discover the benefit of actually prioritizing. So it could be a backdoor solution.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so let's have the top story, and then we'll talk about how it fits or does not fit in with your solution.
We'll make it fit.
Oh, it fits.
It always fits. It always fits. Yeah. Okay. All right, here's the top story. Hundreds of Palestinian families with crying children fled today as Israel intensified airstrikes on Hamas targets, including the homes of the movement's leaders. Before bombarding them this time, Israel told tens of thousands of border area residents to evacuate their neighborhoods. The Palestinian death toll in 9 days of fighting has risen to over 200, with about 1,450 wounded. On the Israeli side, one man was killed and several people were wounded since the fighting started on July 8th. The new bombings came a day after Israel initially accepted an Egyptian truce proposal, which called for hostilities to end, followed by talks about longer-term ceasefire, which would include easing Gaza's 7-year-old border blockade by Israel and Egypt. Hamas rejected the plan and instead launched more rockets at Israel. The militant group views a significant easing of the blockade as key to its survival, but it doesn't believe that Egypt's current rulers are fair brokers. As Cairo's effort failed, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu warned that Hamas will pay a high price for rejecting the truce officer, the truce offer. The Gaza Interior Ministry's website today said that Israeli warplanes carried out dozens of airstrikes before dawn today, targeting 30 houses, which included those of several senior Hamas leaders, Mahmoud Zahar, Jamila Shanti, Fatih Hamas, and Ismail Ashkar. Now, Zahar was a key figure in Hamas's violent takeover of Gaza back in 2007, while the other three were members of the parliament elected in 2006. Many Hamas leaders have gone into hiding since Israel began attacking. Now, besides the airstrikes, Israel told tens of thousands of residents near the Israeli border to evacuate their homes by 8 a.m. today. They delivered these warnings through phone calls, which were automated, through text messages, and also old school method, leaflets dropped from planes. The Israeli military said in its message that large numbers of rockets were launched from these areas and that Israel plans to bomb these locations. So, Jay, I know you've got a lot to say. Let's start with you.
Okay. Well, let me start with this. So one of the things that they left out in that story is that Hamas routinely will put their weapons caches and protect their leaders using their own civilians as human shields.
Nice.
Yes, that is left out of that. The other thing, there are two other pieces that are left out of that. The other is that Israel is actually shipping in aid and food and everything like that into Gaza. And I can get you the statistics on that of exactly what's going in. And the other piece is that they are actually treating the wounded Palestinians in Israeli hospitals, including the leader of Hamas's daughter. She's there not for a war injury, she's there for something else. So there are other people. This is a long time coming after the, what sparked this was the kidnapping of three Israeli civilians, one of whom was American, by the way, and their murder. They were teenagers. So again, these are very complicated issues. The Israeli Defense Force, I know them, I've worked with them. They are going above and beyond what any other army in the world has ever done to try to minimize civilian casualties. The challenge is that they're in close quarters and the enemy actually uses their civilians as human shields. So you can see, they're dropping leaflets, they're making phone calls, they're trying to get people, to safety before they go in and bomb.
Yeah, so you're saying that even though Israel bombed residential areas, the fact that they warned them and are treating the casualties.
They're not residential areas for a couple of reasons. They are.
Okay.
Hamas will store their weapons in a school. Okay. They will store their weapons in a mosque. They will store their weapons in people's houses, thus making them a target.
Yeah.
It's incredibly unfortunate. They're not a militant group. They are a terrorist group. Anybody that, you know, specifically targets civilians and non-combatants for political gain is a terrorist group. That's the definition of terrorism.
Okay.
You know, so.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to answer any other questions. Now, you know, are there going to be problems with this? Is there going to be collateral damage? Are there going to be some, you know, Israeli Defense Force soldiers that possibly act out of line? I'm sure there will be, but you know, this has been a long time coming. You know, the Israelis evacuated Gaza. They gave it entirely over to the Palestinians back in 2007. So, and not only that, I mean, literally every Jew was moved out of Gaza. Like, they disinterred bodies. Okay. So they have no reason whatsoever to attack and launch rockets in Israel. They've got their own area. They're not under Israeli rule anymore. They're not under any kind of any obligation to the Israelis.
Okay. So, Rick, you've got a more outside perspective on this. What do you think?
Well, first, I want to make a point that warfare has changed over the decades, over the centuries. I mean, it used to be, you go in and you kill everyone that you didn't want to use as a slave, and you take whatever you want, and genocide was like the goal. And to have anything less than that in the Middle Ages or earlier or whatever was kind of like foolish. Because you want to win, and if you don't do that, they're going to do it to you. And so as time progressed, middle of our last century, you got the World War One and World Two, and so on. And we bombed Tokyo. Germany bombed London. Everyone else bombed Germany. There were civilians and targeted left and right there. But something has changed. What's changed is that the world is getting more peaceful, and so the better actors of the world are thanks in part to technology and just the riches that capitalism, democracy, and defense afford a nation, we're able to more and more be surgical in our attacks. However, if you are a poor, group or nation, whatever you want to call the Palestinians, you don't have those kind of options available to you. You have no choice but to hide your weapons in mosques and schools, because if you don't, they're toast, really fast. Okay. So, warfare just sucks, and, I'm not going to blame the Palestinians for that tactic, but I am going to say still clearly, they're not good actors. They in their schools, they teach these corrupting principles that Israel doesn't exist, that they don't deserve to exist, that all these religious things. I mean, it's just absolutely a propaganda for their own kids, and it's that kind of stuff that perpetuates this. So the only way to really get rid of them, there's two ways, I think. The only way to solve this problem is one, go old school. Go in there and just take over and martial law, rebuild institutions, and don't play Mr. Nice Guy. You don't have to do genocide, but you have to go in there and take over again, and the Israelis might even do that. There's been some talk of that. But the other way is you just got to be patient. You keep being the good guy. You keep doing what Israel's doing, being as good as he can be, given how horrible the situation is, and you wait for the cap and prioritized tidal wave to sweep over that part of the world, which might be the last part of the world that it enters, besides maybe North Korea. And that might take a century or so, but, you do what you can in the meantime.
Yeah, I would actually, I just want to put a finer point on something. Actually, Hamas does have another option. And that is to come to the negotiating table with Israel, which the door is open to. The door has been open to that. Benjamin Netanyahu makes the call to Mahmoud Abbas every day. He says, I can be in Ramallah in 15 minutes if you need me. And they've refused. Yep. They've refused every peaceful option because their goal is not a peaceful solution. You can read the Hamas charter. It calls for the destruction of not just Israel but Jews everywhere, and ultimately Christians.
Yeah. Well, you're right that the bad actors always have the choice of becoming good actors, but you know, that's not going to happen.
Right.
When has that ever happened?
Yeah, exactly. All right, we have a lot more to talk about. We're just going to take a quick break. We're going to be back, and we've got more to talk about on this topic. So we'll be right back with you in a few minutes on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. And before the break, we were talking about the top story, which is Israel bombing the Gaza Strip and Palestinian families running away, and we had a lot of discussion over, all kinds of different aspects of that. Now, Rick, you were saying something about bad actors not turning into good actors. When has that ever happened? Now, we're not talking about films here. We're not talking about movies. Yeah. We're talking about, when you say bad actor, right, you're talking about people that do morally questionable things. Is that our definition?
The Hitlers of the world.
I can't hear Rick.
The Mao Zedong.
Now I can't hear Rick.
You're kidding me. You can't
hear. I can't hear Rick.
You're kidding me.
And I don't think Doug can hear us.
And I hear Doug, Jay
can
fine.
Hear me?
So.
And I can hear Heather.
Okay. I'm going to call back in.
All right.
Okay, I can hear Rick if I turn
Doug, I'm going to call back in.
Oh, yeah. He's on the Hangout. Okay. Yeah, we can hear that.
Yeah.
Rick, we can hear you on the Hangout, but we can't hear you on the phone. Just so you know. So that means that he probably can't be heard on the air either. So, Jay, I'm going to ask you to...
Okay. Ask away.
All right, so basically, you're blaming Hamas because they're what you call the terrorist group. Like, they're really the instigators in all this. Is that what you're saying?
They are the ones who have fired rockets into Gaza. Fired rockets into Israel constantly. By the way, this goes on all the time. It doesn't make the news. They're not firing at military targets. They're firing at schools. They're firing at synagogues. They're firing at homes.
Okay. So when America bombed Hiroshima, that was taking out civilians. So would that count as terrorism?
That's a much more complicated issue. I'm not going to offer an opinion on it, but here's what I'll say.
Okay.
The Emperor of Japan said, we are going to fight to the last, to every last man, woman, and child. We're going to conscript them, and that is going to be our army. Truman looked at the numbers and saw that he was going to lose another, like, I think, 500,000 Americans, and he made the decision to bomb Hiroshima, bombed Hiroshima. They didn't surrender, and then he bombed
Nagasaki
again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about an agonizing decision to have to make, but that was the decision he made, and that's what led up to it.
Okay, but by definition, is that terrorism?
No, because the emperor had said we're going to conscript every man, woman, and child. Every citizen of Japan was then Imperial Japan was then a combatant. Now the aftermath was horrible. I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying it was an agonizing decision. And you're talking about a war weary country the likes of which we have not seen, since then. Thank God. But you're talking about a huge loss of life. I mean, literally every none of us were really around then, but. But the stories were that literally every block in America lost a son.
Yeah.
So it affected everybody, and it was time to end it. They were it could have been a long protracted war, and President Truman decided to say enough.
Okay. The difference here, what you're saying when you say the definition of terrorism is targeting civilians,
is deliberately targeting civilians or non-combatants
Hi, I'm Cynthia McKinney, and I'm on CBS Radio.
So it, does it matter that they're targeting their own civilians? You said they use their own civilians as human shields.
They do. I got to tell you, the people of Gaza are victimized far more by their own people than they are by any Israeli incursion into Gaza.
Okay, where else in the world does that happen where terrorists, so to speak, will target their own civilians, not the so-called enemy's civilians?
Nowhere, actually. Even the Basque separatists do not do that. The IRA in Ireland don't do that. Back in the day, you know, the Turkish Grey Wolves didn't do it. The Italian Red Brigades never did it. The Bader Mannhof gang never did it. Well, yeah, they kind of did because they took out some German industrials. But in general, the Islamic terrorists, not just in Gaza and not just in Israel, but across the Middle East, are victimized their own people.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Guys,
that,
can you hear me now?
Well, that definitely makes a difference. Now, as far as how Egypt is handling it and how Israel's handling it, what are your thoughts?
I'm actually sort of surprised that Egypt has come on and suggested the ceasefire and everything like that. And I'm not surprised that Hamas didn't go with it. I'm pleasantly surprised that Egypt actually suggested it. Because they actually have a huge problem too about the Gaza border. Yeah, they have terrorists pouring over their border and doing things there.
So the fact that they're suggesting peace, that they're suggesting ceasefire, that's a positive sign to you? Whether or not it was accepted, the fact that they offered.
Yes. I thought it was a little unusual, but yeah.
Can you hear me now?
You know, keep in mind, Egypt has a peace treaty with Israel. They're not buddy buddy, but it's a unbroken treaty.
No, they can't, Doug.
For over 30 years.
So it's just the Gaza Strip attacking both sides, the Palestinians attacking.
Well, no.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, keep in mind, Hamas is,
Doug,
you know, they're
Doug. They
you
can't know, hear you, and they can't hear me.
Anything like that, they're incredibly corrupt.
Okay, so they would basically attack anyone who was nearby, any country that bordered on them, anyone who wants to interfere, they'll just attack?
That I don't know. You'd have to ask them. you need to unwrap the head of Hamas.
Yeah.
To find that out.
Zahar. We'll ask Zahar.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll talk.
Okay, well, you know, let's work on getting him on the next show. I think we can do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see.
All right,
so you know what? We're going to take a quick break again, and when we come back, we're going to have Jay's inside perspective, and hopefully by that point we can get Rick back on as well, because we're having a little bit of technical difficulties. We'll be right back on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix, and we have fixed all the technical difficulties. So as well as fixing politics, we also fix technology. We do have Rick Raddatz back on the air. And Rick, before the break, Jay and I were talking more about the top story and his thoughts on also Hiroshima. You probably heard us, but I wanted to get your thought, because before the previous break, I had said, well, let's pick that up when we got back, and it was something to do with bad actors not becoming good actors. You said, when has that ever happened?
Yeah, I'm sure there's examples in history where two countries finally get tired of war and they do figure things out. And but I think it's more about the country doing it. Whenever you have a bad actor, like you know, a leader who is just doing the wrong things in a big way, and so. I just commend Israel for trying to do the best they can. And the way I judge who's the good actor, who's the bad actor, is I imagine if the other side started behaving better in some way, what would the first side do? Okay. And the truth is, there's nothing Israel could do that would please Hamas. But if Hamas just stopped at throwing rockets in Israel, you know, there'd be peace. So Hamas is the bad actor here.
Okay. We lost Rick again.
We can end this. I'll give you a great quote by Golda Meir, which was, she was a prime minister of Israel and a female for that matter. She said, we can forgive the Arabs for killing our children, but we can never forgive them for making us kill their children.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's great.
So it's not the protracted war that Israel wants to be involved in.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so let's move on to the inside perspective. But first, if anyone listening wants to join in the conversation, if you have something to say about the top story or anything that we're talking about today, or you have questions for Rick or Jay, just give us a call at 888-627-6008. That's 1-888-627-6008. Now, Jay Amernick has a regular segment that we call Inside Perspective because he has been involved in politics from the inside. So he has a different perspective than Rick does. So, Jay, take it away with today's Inside Perspective.
Yes, and it is simply this. And again, this is my second week in a row I have to take on the right.
Yes, because you have to balance it.
I know. Fair and balanced. Okay. There should be no such thing as a social conservative in the world of real politics. Okay. Basically what I'm saying is once they drop all the silly nonsense, whatever it is, if it's teaching creationism in school, if it's teaching, you know, prayer in school, whatever it is, any violation, obviously, of church state separation, or imposing their religious views on the rest of us. Once they get past that, then we can actually have a real conversation, because what it does is, first of all, that, you know, if you look at most of the, you know, quotes that float around when somebody wants to take on the right, it's usually not, you know, something based on a real policy decision. It's usually somebody like Michelle Bachmann or Rick Santorum, you know, going off on some ridiculous flight of fancy, you know, some anti-homosexual comments, some something or other. And that's what is used, and it makes it so where no one's listening anymore to the right's point of view. So once they dump that, they will be okay. And okay. I'm happy to I would debate Laura Ingraham on that, because she thinks that they need more guns, more Jesus, more all that. And I'm saying less of that in real politic, and more substantial discussions and arguments on the issues that really matter and that can really affect every American. And this actually goes right into Rick's, he may actually not disagree with me on this week.
Okay. but you're talking as if the political right is equal to religion. All your examples were prayer in school, imposing religious views.
Because most of the social conservative issues come from a religious foundation. I don't care if they want to believe that, let them believe it. My issue is when they try to legislate it.
Okay, so you're saying that the only people who try to legislate their religious views are the political right.
No, but I have to rag on the right today.
Okay.
The religious left do it as well, but that's a different discussion.
Okay.
They're usually not as vocal, and it's usually not as out of touch.
Okay. And it's not so much imposing their views, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Isn't the left more about let's all be happy with what we believe ourselves?
Well, okay, as far as religion goes, yes. The left, and when I say the left, I'm not talking about the Democratic Party, I'm not talking about liberals, I'm talking about the left. For the same reason, when I talk about the right, I'm not talking about conservatives, and I'm not talking about Republicans. The left's religion is socialism.
Okay.
That's
not a religion.
I'm telling. If you talk to them, it is their religion. They, So I'm going to have to do another scene where I rag on the right again, because you've taken me to the left.
Okay, so communism...
Their philosophy is that no one... It's the William Jennings Bryan thing, is it? No one ever made $1 million honestly, and we should take it away from them and give it to someone else. That's the left's imposition.
Okay, that's communism, so...
That's what I said.
Oh, no, you said socialism.
It's the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
It's absolutely the same thing. They came up with the term socialism when everyone got hip to the concept of communism and realized how bad it was. Okay. And then they tried to dress
either
it up and call it socialism. And when that didn't work, they called it progressivism.
Great. But either way, that is not a religion. That's a political view.
It is a religion.
I'm telling you, to them it is. To them, it is the gospel. I'm telling you.
Okay, but there are people on the left who are Buddhist. There are people on the left who are, as Rick said last week, spiritual, not religious.
The Buddhists do not try to, in general, there's, as far as I know, really no extreme Buddhists who will try to impose. The only thing they'll try to impose on you is like meditation or something like that.
Yeah, and well, they don't go knocking on your door and try to recruit you to their religion.
That's true, too. That's right.
However, they might, and they're not, those aren't Buddhists, but Tibetan monks have been known to give out flowers to people and stuff, so.
Yeah, but there's no string attached to that.
Yeah, okay, that's true.
You know.
All right, so Rick, did you hear?
I'm not one to accept flowers from a guy, but yeah. That's my own, you know, my own thing.
Rick, did you hear Jason Tsai's perspective?
I caught the tail end of it, but on the is socialism religion thing, I think the difference between cults and political parties, worldviews, traditional religions and organizations like that, conspiracy nuts, all of these types of groups, they all have a lot of very similar characteristics, and actually that's what my rant is about today, is about logic versus belief. And so we can talk about that when the time comes up. But I agree with Jay in a more broad definition of religion, because it's hard to persuade someone on the left of certain facts, just like it's hard to persuade someone on the right of certain facts. And that's about the religion. It's not about about the power of your logic.
Okay, well, the difference between a cult and those other things is a cult takes specific measures, such as cutting off communication with their people from outside friends and family, controlling
Fox
their
News,
food,
MSNBC, the cutting controlling, off communication, yes.
Controlling their food, controlling their water, controlling their ability
Monsanto
to have sex.
Whatever.
It's sexual control, it's mind control.
I agree with you. I agree with you that there's clearly a spectrum there, and some cases are cases where the organization has crossed the line clearly, and some are gray areas and some are socially accepted. But there's also a lot of commonalities about how people get in there and how they stay in there, and the control structures and the almost the hypnotic trance that people enter into. I agree with that. There are similar aspects.
Yeah. And if you were going to make an argument that they were actually following cult-like tactics, such as cutting off sex, cutting off food, cutting off communication with outside friends and family, for that we would have to look at the religious, the leader, so to speak, the nuns, the monks, the priests, whatever the heads are called in that specific religion, those are the ones who are denied those types of things, not the sheep, the flock.
I'm totally confused about what you just said.
The cult-like strategies, which are cut off food, cut off sex,
yeah,
cut off communication with the outside world, that happens in places like monasteries. That happens in places like nunneries, convents. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen in the church. The cult-like strategies happen with the leaders of the church, the nuns, the monks, the priests, the ministers, whatever you're going to call them.
You know what? The more I've seen of life, And the more sociopathic people I've encountered by accident in business or wherever, the more I'm beginning to believe that even these leaders aren't the, it's a temptation to think that these people, who are such bad actors, are intentionally manipulating people. I think they believe it themselves, more and more. And it's just a break with reality. But it's religion is the kind of the popular benign, entry drug into that side of the spectrum, and political parties the same way. As you move into cults, that's where you start to have real problems. But the Democratic Party uses as many cult-like tactics as they can get away with, and so do the Republicans. It's all very sophisticated marketing. They're trying to isolate their members from the other side. They're trying to inoculate them from every argument that they come across, and not in terms of logical defense, but in terms of here's why you want to ignore them, and the dramatization of the divide and so on. These are all things that cults do, and the Republicans and Democrats just do it in a way where they can get away with it and not be called a cult, but they're trying every trick they can, everything they can get away with.
Well, the way that mass organizations like that tackle it is more of a propaganda stance. So it's mind control in the sense of, I'm going to baffle you with BS to the point where you don't know what to believe, so you're going to believe what we're telling you. And in that sense, yes, I agree. They're not cutting off food, they're not cutting off sex, but they might be saying sex is bad, this kind of food is bad, that kind of thing. So,
Bill Clinton never said anything.
You're a bad person if you don't recycle, buy local, eat organic, and so on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Jay says Clinton never did that. Is that what you said?
Yeah, Clinton never told anybody sex and food were bad.
Okay. All right. So on that note, we're going to come back in a few minutes with Rick's rant, but we need to take a quick break. So let's see in a few minutes on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail here with Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. And before the break, we were discussing how many cult-like tactics organizations like political parties and churches utilize. And, there's an agreement that they do utilize some of those tactics. They cannot utilize all of them unless they can actually isolate people literally. However, the attempt at mind control is often there. So before we get into Rick's rant, is there anything you guys wanted to add to the cult discussion? And I'm not talking about the music group. I love them, by the way.
Yeah, great. They're great.
They put on a great show last fall here. So
I met their drummer 2 weeks ago.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, all right. Enough of that discussion. There we go.
Yeah, okay.
I think we can move on.
Okay. All right. So let's have Rick's rant. I'm curious to hear because he said it tied into what we were just talking about. So let's take it away, Rick.
Yeah, well, my rant today is to this. If you think you're logical, if you think you're rational, if you think you're open-minded, you're probably wrong. Okay? I mean, there are those people out there. I'm going to argue that I am sometimes one of those people. I spent 7 years talking to people on the left, right, and center, trying to honestly learn all these different points of view. And so during that phase in my life, I was, I believe, pretty open-minded, pretty rational, pretty logical, open to being persuaded. But then that window shut. I was less and less able to listen to because now we have discovered, a solution of this pentanomic view of the world. It explains so much, but logically, that I find myself becoming a little bit more intolerant of myself. So, I mean, this is really hard. I'm not saying I'm immune to this. But I just want to say, as someone who's been on both sides of this, who's truly opened his mind to different points of view and then before and after experienced less of that, I just want to say how hard it is to truly being open to the other people's points of view. You have to really aggressively do it. You have to have almost a change of heart yourself first to truly do it. And so I want to encourage everyone listening to pick some opposing view or opposing side or something in your life, whether it's within your marriage or in politics or religion or whatever, something that's meaningful to you. And pursue that other side and see if you can't really just walk a mile in their moccasins, as they say, and see what happens. For me, it was a life-changing experience. And I still got to maintain the views I had before. I just was able to then add in and consolidate a lot of other views as well. It made me a more whole person in terms of my philosophy about politics especially. So, you know, think twice. If you think yourself as an open-minded, logical, rational person, really think about that and ask yourself if you really are.
Okay. Jay, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's what led me to the center, actually. You know, I started off very young, very, you know, ideological and you know, very, very far left, and then moderated to the center the more I sort of saw what was going on in the world. And you know, I didn't do one of these radical swings to the far right because, you know, there's a lot, you know, going on there that I saw that's literally just the opposite side of the coin. And he's, Rick is, Rick is right on point today. We're, both of us are agreeing with each other today. but it's literally what led me to when I just found out that no political ideology, no political party has all the answers.
Right, and I think.
Well, wait a minute, Jay.
You know, as we go through life,
I disagree with that. We've got this right here in the show. We got the solution.
Okay. We're not economics. We're not a political party.
Yet.
Okay.
Okay.
Well,
we need a little momentum
because
first,
it'll be a moderate party with the best of.
So yeah. So what I was gonna say is, it seems like in life when we look at anything, the extremes are where things fall apart. If you go to the extreme in pretty much anything, that's where it falls apart. It's in the middle where you make compromises, where you have that balance, where you have that yin and yang.
Heather,
and that's
Heather, that
the
is
basis.
An extreme statement.
Really?
That is an extreme. Yeah, saying the extremes are where you have. No, in this case, the extremes are right. But they're
no,
only
they're
half
not.
Right. They have each half. Each
yeah, they're only half
each
right.
Extreme
yeah.
Half the answer. Yeah, it's extreme.
Yeah, so
half
it's
the answer.
So exactly. So exactly what I was saying. Final. When you come together in the middle and you find the balance and the compromise, that's where the answers lie.
You're
saying the exact same thing.
It's a union. It's a union of
right,
left and right. It's extreme right plus extreme left.
Right, because sometimes the right is actually correct, and sometimes the left is actually correct. And there shouldn't be a compromise on some of their points.
But they're compromising by the very nature of taking on some of the points from the other side that they previously disagreed with. That's the nature of compromise. Compromise doesn't mean watering down everything you believe in. Compromise means accepting the other views of the other party, not changing everything. That's not compromise.
Well, I agree with you that there's kind of those two steps of compromise. You know, there's being open to the other side having a point, and then there's another kind of compromise, which is the kind that sucks, which is no one gets what they want, but okay, this is the best we can do. And both of those types of compromise exist in the world. We should probably name them, because what cap and prioritize is not a compromise. We're capping government as tight as even anarchical capitalists want. We were trending government towards maximum freedom. And then within that cap, we're keeping purchasing power the same, and we're constantly reprioritizing, finding better and better ways to use that constant purchasing power, thus trending towards maximum social justice. So,
right.
We
so that's
are
a compromise because
right.
You're taking something that the right wants and something that the left wants and putting it together, and both of them have to give up something that they thought that they wanted in order to agree to that solution. So that's a compromise.
Thing,
that's a definition of a compromise.
Up. The thing they have to give up is their thought that the other side has no value or no points or is just wrong.
Right, right. That's the definition of compromise.
But no, nah.
I, if you do the same thing in a marriage. The husband and the wife don't have to change their views if they have strong views on something. All they have to do is accept the other person and acknowledge that, okay, you know, there's some validity there. And let's, you know, let's pick something where we both win. Let's pick a win-win scenario. That's what you're talking about. You're talking about a win-win scenario. That's the definition of compromise. Not, oh, both of us have to give up everything we believe so that we can meet in the middle and be wishy-washy on everything. That's not compromise. That's not standing for anything.
Well, that's what often happens in the legislative process, though.
Yeah, okay, well, still.
The same way that Eskimos have 28 words for snow or whatever the myth is, I think we need to come up with 27 words for compromise, because there are these different flavors of compromise. And I agree with you that they're all in that family, but they're also very different from each other. And it's important because a lot of people will reject any bipartisan idea out of hand because they know that their purist philosophy is right, but they're wrong. And that's part of what we have to fight through.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you guys want to say? We've only got a couple minutes left. What are your final thoughts besides telling them to go to the website? Because, yes, people go to politicalfixradio.com. But besides that, any other thoughts you guys have to wrap this up, bring it all together, anything?
I'll just close my side here with a restatement of what I want to see happen in the world. And that is, I want to see one major government, it could be any major government, I want to see them cap and prioritize their spending. So the cap guarantees fiscal sustainability at least, and the prioritizing makes sure that government spending goes and helps the people who need help most and helps them in ways that helps them the best. Because that's how we're going to achieve both freedom and social justice and get past this current political divide that we're on. That's the political fix. So cap and prioritize, cap and prioritize, cap and prioritize.
So you think we should cap and prioritize?
Cap and prioritize. Yeah.
Very good.
Cap and prioritize. Got it. Jay, any final thoughts?
I'm going to agree with Rick again. My God, this is a banner.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. But I'm going to say, I think the U.S. is the government to do it.
You think so?
The world watches us. When we actually, in my mind, have probably the least, political dichotomy in the world. Like our left and right, like our Republicans and Democrats are not so far off as if you look at Labor and Tory, have you ever seen like Parliament from, you know, Japan or something? I mean, these guys, they get into fist fights.
Wow.
So it may not be Japan. I can't remember. It's somewhere in Asia that I see it all the time. But anyway, that's the idea, is that as far as like existing democracies, I think we have the best shot of making it happen here.
Nice. Okay. Well, anyone listening, again, go to politicalfixradio.com where you can see any of our behind-the-scenes videos as well as past archived radio audio shows. And next week we'll have another heated discussion where maybe this time Jay and Rick will not agree, because usually they don't. Usually they don't. This was a very unique show. But in any case...
You can't be very unique.
Yeah.
Unique means without like or parallel.
It wasn't very unique in terms of personality problems.
Okay.
All right.
Well, we'll be back with you next week. Take care. We'll be back on The Political Fix.
Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Vale Goss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.